This is the Remote Podcast, and I am your host, Victor Kung. You're listening to episode 29. Hello, and welcome to the Remote Podcast, episode 29. This podcast is all about location independence, digital nomadism, and living life on your terms. Each week, we interview a new guest on the show, and this week, I sat down with Johnny FD, one of the most visible content creators in the digital nomad space. Johnny is known for many things, including running the annual Nomad Summit, where over 400 experienced and aspiring location-independent entrepreneurs gather from around the world for a day of inspiring talks and networking. In this episode, Johnny reveals it all. From being an avid raver, pickup artist, dive master, and Muay Thai fighter, he shares his entire life journey and shares his lesson learned along the way. In addition, Johnny shares his thoughts on the growth of the digital nomad community and how aspiring content creators can make a name for themselves in this space. I thank Johnny for his radical transparency and for his willingness to hop on the podcast to share his story with you all. Now let's get into it. Hey, Johnny, so glad to have you on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm excited to do this.
Yeah, and so to quickly introduce you to my audience, who should really know who you are by now, Johnny FD has been one of the most active content creators in the digital nomad space, and he's inspired a lot of people. And today, I'm not going to be asking him about dropshipping or any of these technical things, but I'm really going to dive straight into his story because I had the privilege of listening to his presentation at Nomad Summit a few weeks ago, and I really learned a lot of new things that I didn't know about Johnny from just looking at his blog. So I think that everyone should really hear this story so that they can really understand, the journey of being a digital nomad as opposed to just the technicalities like dropshipping, Amazon FBA, and other more technical things.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I think that one of the reasons why I've been talking less and less about specifics in business and more about bigger picture ideas is because I know once you have the right mindset and your goal is to be able to be location dependent and be an entrepreneur or build a business, that all those things will come. And there's so many different ways for people to actually make money online. I think having the Travel Like a Boss podcast, I've realized everybody has like a different business. And just because something worked for me doesn't mean it's the best path for someone else. So on my blog, sometimes I'll still share the business side of it because people are interested in it. But more and more, I've been doing things like I just created a quiz on johnnyfd.com that is a quiz that says, like, should you dropship or not? And for more than half the people, it says, no, don't do it. Do something else. So I think kind of misconception with the blog and the things I put out there is that's only like one snippet of my life, where johnnyfd.com is only maybe like 3.5 or 4 years old. Before that, I had another blog called My Fight Camp, which is actually still active, so you guys can go back and read the archives. And that was for 4 years of living in Thailand as a Muay Thai fighter, going to different gyms, trying to find the cheapest place to live. I talked a lot about the cost of living, and I talked a lot about scuba diving because I would go back and forth. Where I would do 3 months of scuba diving, 3 months of Muay Thai, and that's all there too. And then before that, I had another blog. And before that, I had another blog. Even before I knew what a blog was, I had a Zanga. Have you ever heard of that?
I think vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I think they shut down like 8 years ago. But it was before blogging was a term that I heard. People were like, oh, do you have a Zanga? And I was like, oh, what is that?
Oh my goodness, that's like the precursor to MySpace. So yeah, I think that's really true. And I think the cool thing is that you've been leaving like these breadcrumbs, these records of everything you've been doing up to now. So why don't you take us back to the very beginning of your story when you realized that, you wanted to do something different?
I think I realized that first grade, where I just wanted to talk. I was in class and I was with 30 other students that were my age, and we all just wanted to hang out and play. And the teacher kept routing, grabbing us and saying, no, you have to sit and listen. You have to, learn about history or memorize these places, memorize these dates in these places. And I was like, what? I don't want to do that. I want to do something that I want, I enjoy doing. And from ever since I can remember, I just never wanted just to have a normal cookie cutter life. And I really believe that school isn't necessarily there to train you in skills to make money in the future or start a business, but it's to train you to be a good employee, where you shut up and you listen, you follow directions. And that was never in my mind.
Yeah, I definitely got that impression reading one of your blog posts that I really liked. It was called, Who is the Real Johnny FD? And I love the analogy you use, in which you basically kind of separate your life into different chapters, in which you thought you were really passionate about something, went down that path, and then, took a step back, recalibrated, and tried something else. And it seems like your life is a series of those steps. So can you take me to the very beginning? And I think your first persona was Johnny Halo.
Yeah. And I don't even remember that much about it, to be honest. It was my Zanga. And I used to just post photos of me at college with my friends and our parties and doing college stuff. I don't think anyone read it besides people that went to my school. And I think it was kind of cool that on campus, randomly people would be like, hey, you're Johnny Halo. And I honestly haven't even heard that name, somebody say it in 15 years. So that was there. I started raving a lot too.
Yeah.
I think that was before college, but then they would call me Johnny Caffeine because I would always be taking caffeine pills just to have the energy.
Right.
To stay up because, you're partying until 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge part of my life that I thought at the time, this is it. This is I found heaven on earth. This is so much fun. This is, 10,000 people, just partying it up all night. And everybody's nice to each other. The music's great. The slogan was peace, love, unity, and respect.
Right.
And I really thought that was it. This is the epitome of happiness. And when that scene kind of ended maybe, I know it's still around today. Actually, now it's getting huge. There's these giant parties like Electric Daisy Carnival.
Yeah.
That probably is like $100 million business now. Mm-hmm. I remember when I went, it was a small, I guess they call it a festival, but it was just like a party.
Right.
It was a bunch of, young kids just do this party. And there was all these other parties that are similar. There's no DJ making $1 million at that time, or at least not in EDM. And here's what's crazy is I was passionate enough about it where I could have been one of those rave promoters where I could have thrown parties where I could get them. I don't think I had the talent to be a DJ, but I could have been involved somehow. Mm-hmm. And I probably could have made a full-time living from that and very good living. And, it was the same thing with, the initial days of blogging with all my sites, even my fight camp. If I knew what I know now about online business, I could have made Muay Thai a real career. Maybe not me fighting, but maybe I would have created a product to sell. Maybe I would have created an online training course. Maybe I would have just monetized the blog better. And I think a big theme with all the sections of my life was that I would just give up because I didn't know where else to go. I thought, okay, that's it. I had fun. I learned some things and I grew from it. But now it's time to move on to something else.
Right. So I think you brought up a really interesting point. So can you actually tell us the mindset you had going into raves? What was it about it? Was it the community aspect that made you feel really accepted? What was it about that really excited you? And then how did that really peter out? And how did you decide what to do next? Which I'm assuming was Johnny Halo when you were in college.
So the first rave I ever went to, it was so hot because in this warehouse and dancing all the time. And I met this girl who happened to live one block away from me. And I just never met her before. But we had been hanging out the whole night. And I was so hot, sweating. And she was like, oh, why don't you just take off your shirt? And I was like, no, I can't do that. And I was already, 17 or 18 at the time, I don't remember. But I remember I had never taken off my shirt in public before. Maybe at a beach or something, but definitely not at a party. And I was like, let's figure it out. I'll take it off. Because there's a bunch of white guys with their shirts off. So I was like, all right, I need to take it off. So it was my first time ever in public with my shirt off. And I felt very insecure at first. But then randomly, people come up to me and they'll be like, oh, man, you're in great shape. Guys give me compliments. A couple random girls came up and they're like, oh, and they were giving me compliments. And my whole life I was so insecure about my body because I grew up as the big Asian kid and I did not fit in. I went to school in San Francisco and majority of the kids were Asian. I was always taller and I was always way bigger. And I thought I was fat. Looking back in photos, I wasn't fat. I was bigger than most people, but I definitely wasn't a fat kid. Maybe I was definitely chubby, like, growing up. But by that time, you know, I was in the wrestling team. You know, I worked out a lot. So I didn't have a six pack or anything, but I had, like, flat abs. I had muscle. And but my image was so insecure that it wasn't until I was there that I really felt free. And that was just kind of just one example of things. But that those couple of years I went raving when I was Johnny Caffeine, or whatever you call it, that was like the freest moment of my life where I realized, okay, like, I can be different. I can, you know, and I can do what I want to do. I can express myself.
Right. So I think that's great, because that's really important for people to know, to really develop that confidence within themselves, understanding that there are communities that share the same ideals. And that's part of the reason why it's so important that we have, like, a digital nomad community, for people to understand that there are other people in the world who are doing these things. Because it might not be that apparent when you're just sitting at home, maybe in the States, in your small town in the Midwest or something. So, you know, you enjoyed the few years raving. What was the point when you realized that, you know, it's time to do something else and to move forward?
I think when I stopped was when I went to UC Irvine. I went to a city college for a couple of years. I was kind of just messing around. So I would still go apart, you know, I'd still go to the raves. Mm-hmm. And the scene back then, like in 99 and 2000, was really good in the Bay Area. You know, we'd have these parties every weekend in Oakland. And then it kind of got this, you know, it became mainstream, you know, and got this bad reputation. Like, Fox News started covering it and things like that. And I went to college and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm like, that was fun, but now it's time to go to college. You know, and I think I still went to, like, a few of the big parties, you know, for New Year's Eve or Halloween. But I didn't go every weekend anymore. And I had 4 years at a, you know, good, you know, university. Just did the normal thing.
Yeah.
That part of my life was actually pretty boring. If I think about it, I played StarCraft a lot. I hung out with my roommates, went to class, and that was really it.
Right. So what made you, obviously looking back, it's like, oh, that was the boring part of my life. But what made you decide to start sharing snippets of your life? Because that's, I'm assuming that's the first time really when you started sharing details about your life online. And where did that interest develop?
I think I've always wanted to share, but I never had a medium to do it. Maybe even before MySpace, I would post on, like, Asian Avenue or these other sites that no longer exist. I had Friendster as well. I used to post all things on there. And I've always just enjoyed sharing things. And I remember my favorite thing to share were deals. So whenever, like, there's a coupon that you can stack with another coupon and price match and then get, like, you know, $100 off of something, I would share that. And looking back, you know, to the friends that, if they didn't know me, they probably would have thought I was spamming them. So I'm just like, hey, you know, you should buy this deal. Yeah. Save $200, you know, print this out, you know, go to Office Max, you know, ask them to price match Best Buy. And it wasn't until I think there was that first blogging platform, Zanga, that I started just writing about normal stuff. I would write about, like, applying for jobs after college, or even during college, I would just talk about, like, finals. And it was like, it was really boring now I think about it, but it was my need almost to express myself. And I think that's why I like blogging, and also I like podcasting, because it is a medium I can fully express myself in a way that I don't feel comfortable doing in any other way. You know, some people might do it through video. Some people might do it through their art. Some people might prefer talking to one person one-on-one and opening up to them in that situation. Some people might prefer poetry, but I guess blogging has always been my way of doing it.
Right. And with self-expression, that's one end of the spectrum. Was there any point in college when you realized, wow, people are reading my content, they're getting value out of this? Because, you know, self-expression by itself is very empty. Nothing wrong with people who like doing that. But when did you realize that there was, you know, the other side? There are people who could get value from the content that you create.
I think it wasn't until my next blog, which is no longer up, but it was all about when I got into that pickup scene for a few years. And the reason why I spent, you know, so much time in it is because that was the big part of my life I was missing. You know, my father never taught me anything about dating or relationships. You know, even my parents' relationship is like, it's very unloving. You know, it's like, you know, they're more like roommates than they are. You know, I never see them kiss. I never see them hold hands. I never had an older brother to teach me how to talk to a girl, approach a girl, ask a girl on a date. And my whole life, I was just kind of lost. And I was, not only was I insecure, but then I also just didn't have the actual skills to do it. So when I read The Game, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And every time I learned something, I would want to share it with other people. Because I was in a situation where if some random person online didn't share with me, and I don't remember how I found the book. I think some random guy that I had been chatting with about something else online somewhere was like, oh, by the way, you like this book. And if it wasn't for all the people who had written stuff about, you know, self-development or even silly things like 10 best pickup lines to use at a bar, if people didn't have given me this information, I would have been even more lost. I was so lost. In retrospect, you know, it was the whole pickup community is guys that are not good with women giving other guys who are not good with women advice. And a lot of times it comes off as really sleazy or cheesy or just stupid and lame.
Right.
But the reason why I think it was so such an important part of my life is because if it wasn't for that, I never would have looked into self-help, never would have read financial books like Rich Dad Poor Dad or 4-Hour Work Week.
Yeah.
I never would have had the confidence to like arrange like meetups. I helped with the PUA Summit, which those skills, I didn't realize that were ever going to help me again.
Yeah.
Those helped me now with organizing the Nomad Summit because now I know how to find a venue, hire video teams, put together, you know, all these other things.
Yeah, and forgive me for just like staying on this topic because I think it's particularly important in light of recent events where obviously I've seen instances where people, where you'd post something on Facebook, you know, just recapping the Digital Nomad Summit, and people would just troll you by posting videos from the PUA Summit. And the reason I want to bring attention to that, because I've also been part of the pickup community in Chicago, you know, similar story to you. I felt like I had to learn these skills from scratch. And I think that there is actually people who are shaming others who are doing that is they're missing the main point. Because I think the big thing you talked about is self-improvement. And I definitely feel like some of the people I've met in the pickup community, yes, a lot of people were sleazy and they wanted to learn things for the bad purposes. But I also had a ton of friends who were the most motivated people I've ever met. These are literally people with social anxiety growing up. Like literally, they would not be able to hold a conversation with someone. They learn everything from pickup. They literally implement everything. They go out like 6 days a week talking to people, practicing their skills, because they think that if they have validation from girls, their life will be complete. But obviously, once they get to that point, they realize that, you know, that's just a small part of their life. And I have so many friends from pickup. I think 5 of my friends moved away from Chicago. One went to Vegas to pursue music. One went to LA to get a university degree to start his business. And I just have to categorically say that, you know, the people I've met from pickup have been the most inspiring people I've met in my life for the reason that they're willing to be humble and accept that they want to learn something. And that mindset is what I would describe as the growth mindset that you carry through with you for the rest of your life, really.
I'm glad you had a really positive experience. I've definitely met some, you know, a very mix of people. I think people get into it for different reasons. I think actually a lot of guys that get into it thinking they want to be a master pickup artist and be able to pick up any girl at any bar, they really just want one girlfriend. And I think that was me. I think I was overcompensating, thinking I needed to be the best in the world, because when in reality, all I really wanted was a girlfriend. Like, and now I think the guys that I still keep in touch with, one of them, he used pickup to meet his wife. And they actually talked about it on their wedding speech. And she said, like, you know, I'm so glad he went through that phase because he never would have had the balls to talk to me. And, you know, he said, you know, some cheesy things on the first date. But as soon as he ran out of pickup lines and he just kind of opened up and he just, you know, was him, I realized, oh, wow, he's actually a great guy that I probably never would have met. You know, but there's good and bad people everywhere in the world. But in general, I think it's really bad to stigmatize someone for the rest of their life and also try to discredit what they're doing today because they went through this self-help thing 7 years ago, 10 years ago.
Yeah, totally agree. That's why I want to just get that out there, because I think people are missing the big picture. It's about self-improvement. There's tons of things you can learn online, whether it's pickup, drop shipping, you know, self-defense, and it's really whatever you choose to use with that information. No one can control that, but
the people I feel like really bad for are the people that wanted, like, I don't know how many there were. I think most people that bought a ticket were committed, there's gonna come anyways, but I'm sure there's at least one or two people that were like, you know what, like, I didn't know this about Johnny, maybe this whole Nomad Summit's a scam led on by some, you know, some bad person, I'm not gonna go to it. Or maybe people were gonna buy tickets last minute and they just didn't go because they read all these bad things online, either about me personally or what they thought about the whole Nomad scene in general. And then they missed out on a great day, maybe meeting future friends or people who can be their future business partners through networking, or even just like learning the information. Mm-hmm. And those are the people I really feel bad. Like, I really feel bad for.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's what happens when you're a content creator, you invite yourself to be criticized or praised. And it's a hard, line, I guess. But before I get into that, I want to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
After, you know, the pickup phase, that was when you actually came down to Chiang Mai, right?
No, I came to Thailand for the first time. That was 2008. So to be honest, one of the big reasons why I moved to Thailand, the main reason was because I was happy. Like, right. I came here on vacation, I was just happy, and I discovered scuba diving, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. But I think deep down inside, I wanted to get out of the pickup stuff, but also just living in LA. Like, I think even though women aren't considered pickup artists, I think the mentality of the guys in LA that were doing pickup stuff, and then just the women, you know, the professional club goers, had like very similar personalities, you know, where people would spend all day trying to figure out how to attract the other opposite sex and then play these like mind games with each other. And both sides, it was just, you know, people were either materialistic or superficial, and a lot of it was just from insecurity. So even though on paper my life in LA was pretty good, you know, I was living at the time, you know, everything was rented, and I actually had very little money in the actual bank, but just like all my friends, but it looked like we had a cool life. You know, we were always going out and partying. And when I came to Thailand for the first time, just on vacation, I realized this is happiness. This is what I want to explore. And it took me a long time to really figure out who I really am, what really makes me happy. But that was the main reason I came, is kind of to get away from the past and finally figure out who I am.
Yeah, and I definitely understand that. I felt that too when there's a lot of emphasis on status and like power. I felt this especially when I went to Vegas, actually. Like, it just felt like such a soulless place where, you know, it was all about the connections you had. And I actually visited my friend who lived in Vegas. He was living in a small, you know, one bedroom, $400 a month. And then I remember it was like 110 degrees one afternoon. And then he ran out of water at home. So we had to drive to the nearest, like, we were in downtown LA. So this was like where a lot of the locals live. We had to go to a station and just put in coins to dispense water. And then you just see all the types of people that are just around that area. People who don't have access to any of the wealth that you see on the strip and things like that. And I can totally understand why you felt the need to get away from all that stuff. So you got to Thailand and you discovered scuba diving and you became a dive master and you taught scuba diving for a while.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about that phase in your life and what you really learned and how it helped you move to the next step.
I wish more digital nomads would put a pause on their financial goals and just do that part of the journey for 1 year, 2 years, how long are you happy? I think people kind of skip over that and they're like, oh, let's come to Thailand and let's start a business. And people might not be ready to start a business. You know, not only like skill-wise, but even just like mentality-wise. If I had tried to start a business when I first moved here, I don't know how well I would have done because I was so stressed for my life back home. And even if I did make money, I probably would have just reverted to my life back home. I would have just spent money on things I didn't need again. I probably would have moved to Bangkok and rented a big penthouse and bought a fancy motorcycle or something. It took me living cheaply. And when I was a dive master, you would get paid maybe $600 a month. A lot of times you just got free accommodation and food. So my budget was very low. Like, I was living in kind of meager places. You know, I was eating, I could only afford to eat 30-40 baht Thai food. I couldn't go to, I couldn't even get hamburgers, because they're just too expensive. So I did that for a couple years, and I learned so much from that. Not only did I finally master a skill, I think my whole life I went without really becoming a black belt in anything, without being professional level or anything. And if you guys are listening to this and you've never started something from scratch and mastered it, and mastery is a hard word to use, right? Because, right. Even somebody who's been doing this something for 100 years may not have mastered it, but masters it in a sense where you can get paid for doing it professionally, and whoever's paying you will be happy and learn a skill from it. So to be a dive master doesn't take that long. You can do it in 3 or 4 months. But that experience of going from zero and literally never of scuba diving, scuba dove before, to getting my first 60 dives and qualifying, for the next kind of section. And then I remember on my 100th dive, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I accomplished something for real. And after working in that industry for a few years and, taking probably hundreds of people underwater and just traveling to different places, I realized wow, this is, if I wanted to, I could do this as a profession for the rest of my life. I never have to go back and get a corporate job again. There's an alternative out there.
And I like how you mentioned the fact that becoming a black belt at something, because I didn't have a technical background, but I work as a web developer now. And I kind of get what you mean, even though we were learning different things, right? Because if you're just, the average guy, you're just an ideas guy, you don't have the ability to create anything. You're always reliant on other people. But suddenly when you have a skill that people are willing to pay you for, and that you realize, I'm self-reliant now, it's like a game changer, because you know that whatever happens, you can rely on yourself.
Yeah. And that's actually the only reason why I felt comfortable getting tattoos on my arms. I had gotten my first tattoo on my first trip to Thailand on my back, but you couldn't even see it, if I had a job. It wasn't until I worked as a dive master, I think it was for a year, I allowed myself to get this jellyfish that's on my arm. And I knew that was a pivotal moment, because I knew that probably meant I could never go back and get a corporate job again.
That's actually true now that I think of it. It's cool that that really came into your decision-making process, something like that. So you worked in the dive industry for a few years, and then the next step was Muay Thai, right?
Yeah.
How did you go from, dive master, swimming with fishes, to, beating the living shit out of someone else in an organized fight, basically?
At first, it was just because, on my days off on the island, there wasn't much to do, and I wanted to go to the gym. But instead of just lifting weights, which was boring, I started watching people do Muay Thai, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. And I remember, probably in my first week of classes, I thought, I was like, oh man, I can do this. And I realized later on, it was an important lesson, that was ego, and it's a lot harder than it looks. But I signed up for my first pro fight that same month I started.
Really? Wow.
Because I watched this guy, a Thai guy, fight one of my friends that I was training with. And I was like, I could have done better than that. My friend lost. So I was like, I could have done better than that. So I challenged him. And I didn't have that. I only had a week to train. I think I'd only been doing it for a month at the time. And I got my butt kicked. It sucked, But what that taught me was, first, I got to check my ego. And second, if I want to do something, I have to really train and work hard towards it. So I immediately challenged him to a rematch, but I wanted to give myself another month to train. And it wasn't that my skill got that much better in a month, but the main reason why I lost so bad was because my cardio sucked. I was too lazy to run. I just didn't enjoy the aspect of it.
Right.
So I just ran every day, during those 30 days, no matter how I felt, if I was tired, if I was lazy. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the first time in my life where I really just dedicated to a goal. And it wasn't easy to beat the guy because he had a lot more experience, but because I had much better cardio and I was going 100% the whole time, I won that second fight. And from that point, I realized, maybe this is it. Maybe I can, this is my new career. And it turns out, it wasn't. it was a lot of good learning experiences, a lot of adventure. And I'm glad I did it overall. I don't think I would ever compete again. It's just it's a lot of damage on your body.
Yeah.
But I think I needed that. And it was almost, you know, the thing I liked about it most is my whole life, most things that we do, you can have an excuse or you can talk, you can use your mouth to talk your way out of something.
Sure.
But in a ring, in a fight, you can't talk your way out of something. You are dedicated. And whatever excuses you have before or after, nobody cares. People just see how you perform. And you can't lie to yourself. You can't lie to the audience.
Right.
You can't lie to your opponent. If you did not train, if your heart's not there, you're going to get your ass kicked. And there's no better lesson in life than physically getting your ass kicked because you didn't train hard enough or you didn't dedicate hard enough. And those are the most important lessons I've ever learned in my life.
Yeah, I've never had the shit kicked out of me before, so but I hope I can learn these lessons without having to go through that.
Well, there are other ways to do it. So if you don't necessarily want to get punched, one great way is with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, because it's probably the only martial art out there where you can go 100% with someone else, and as long as you tap, so you submit, you don't get any injuries. Aside from that, maybe doing something very challenging like a Tough Mudder race or like a triathlon. You know, I'm sure like a marathon or something would do something similar mentally. But I don't know. I that's definitely not for me. Like, I've always liked to change things up. But if you've never done anything where like you feel physically ill, but you have to move forward and you had to train for it, so it's both mental and physical.
Right.
I recommend someone do that, you know.
So that's the big thing, the physical and the mental together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I wrote about it in my first book, 12 Weeks in Thailand, which is kind of a memoir of both the scuba diving days and the Muay Thai days. But one of the biggest kind of life accomplishments I did besides the fight was climbing Mount Kinabalu, which is, I think it's the highest mountain in Southeast Asia. And the reason why it was such a kind of growth moment for me was, even though I had trained for it as much as I could, and I really did train for it,
right,
I just wasn't physically able to climb the mountain. Like, I think, you know, not even 3/4 up, like, my body just gave up. It was high elevation. You know, to be fair, I think they say 25% of people don't make it to the top. Mm-hmm. So I was just one of those 25%. But for the first time in my life, I was like, I don't care. Like, I've been training for this for 6 months or however long it was. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to make it. I'm going to make it no matter what. And it was the first time in my life I didn't give myself an excuse or a way out. And it was the first time in my life, and it almost sounds a bit cheesy every time you hear someone say this, because unless you're in that situation, it's kind of hard to feel it. But I specifically remember telling myself, like, I don't care if you die. I don't care if your lung collapses or you're so tired that you just slip down the mountain, you know, and you just fall off the cliff, or you just, you know, pass out and just bang your head. And just, I don't care. Like, this is it. And I think me deciding that's been the only time in my life, besides maybe in the ring when I was competing a few times, where I really wanted to win. And I was like, I don't care if I end up in the hospital, I'm just going to keep fighting. Like, there was no other real times where I had to drive and say, I don't care what it takes, I'm going to get to the end. And that has helped me in business more than anything else.
Yeah. And just doing a quick recap, I think we're seeing a lot of themes here. Like, there's each stage of your life has growth associated with it. And whatever you want to label it, like the first phase when you discovered raves, Johnny, caffeine, or whatever, you discovered self-confidence, being comfortable in your own skin. Then with Johnny Halo, the Zanga stuff, you discovered your love for sharing content with other people, and you were just getting into that phase. And then in the pickup phase, you realized that you could really create content that helped other people. At the same time, you realized that, you know, just having women in your life, that wasn't what really made you happy.
And one of the reasons why I never deleted those videos, even after I got out of the pickup community, you know, 6+ years ago now, is because I knew, even though some of the headlines, you know, some of the things I said or did were probably like terribly like embarrassing or, you know, just over the top or just, you know, just like cheesy, or a lot of it was just douchey. But 90% of it, if you really look at the actual overall message, I was really trying to share good things that can help anyone, men or women, you know, have people either be more socially aware, less insecure, be more confident, just be in better social situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in retrospect, it would have been a lot easier if I just deleted everything when I got out of the pickup community. Because, and you know what? Here's the crazy part is I got out in 2008 when I first moved to Thailand. If I just kind of like turned my back, I don't think anyone would even know. Because it was too embarrassing for me to talk about, so I just never mentioned it. But it was the fact that for years after that, 2010, 2011, every time I would go back to LA for a vacation or whatever it was, my family, I would go give a talk at the PUA Summit, which somebody else was hosting, you know, during those years. But I just want to give back and share. So I would talk about things like lifestyle or like becoming, you know, a more confident, attractive version of yourself. And it had nothing to do with pickup. And I remember even specifically saying in those videos, like, I'm not a pickup artist, neither should you guys be, but here are tips that will help you. And I'm almost being punished by the super liberal left-wing people online for, you know, wanting to share that information. And I think it sucks because things like that that prevent anybody from wanting to share. Like, I honestly don't even, like, I can't imagine anybody wanting to take the path that I did and share everything openly, knowing the repercussions of it. Knowing how many people would take their stuff out of context or find like the one bad thing that they said out of 10,000 good things that they said and just blow that out of proportion. Like, I can't imagine me starting over at 17 years old or 18 years old and thinking, oh yeah, let me share everything and help other people. I think if I was logical or I was smart, I would just say, fuck everyone else. I'm just going to do my own thing. You know, I'm never going to post anything. I'm not going to share, even if I find the best thing in the world, I'm not going to share it with anyone. I'm just going to do it myself. Right. And I don't know if it's luckily or unluckily, it's just not my personality to do that.
Right. And do you think that's one of the reasons why, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, a lot of people who are really making money on dropshipping, they're not going to share their secrets because it's secrets. Do you think that kind of mentality is detrimental to the greater good? And do you think that's why there are so few digital nomads? There are tons of travel bloggers who are just killing it across every platform. But there, from my perspective, there are very few digital nomads, especially, you know, since you started to now, who are really creating quality content with a value-first approach.
Yeah, I think everyone has different personalities. And to be honest, so my best friend Chris that I travel with, he also dropships. And he makes, I think he last month he made over 10K in profit. So he makes a lot more than I do now with the actual dropshipping stores, but he never talks about it. Like, if you know him, you're his friend, or maybe like over a beer, like he'll tell you whatever you want to hear. But he doesn't like coming on the podcast, he doesn't like doing interviews. He doesn't want to speak, even though I would love him to. You know, I would love for him to speak in the Nomad Summit or the coffee clubs. It's just not his personality. You know, he's just like, you know what? He's like, nah, I'm just going to do my own thing. And it doesn't make him a bad person. Like, he's the nicest guy I know. He's one of the, you know, the kindest, smartest guys I know. It's just not in his personality. Like, he just doesn't enjoy having that attention on him. And there are a lot of people like him. I think the whole kind of digital nomad backlash has nothing to do with what people think it is. I think deep down inside, people don't really care if I used to be a pickup artist 10 years ago. I don't think anyone really cares that the XYZ. I think people, what really matters to them and the thing that's really like giving them this kind of this fuel is them not being happy in their own lives and needing something else to blame, something external. And it's not everyone. Like, I think it might seem like that sometimes because if you go on to any Reddit thread or any Facebook group about digital nomads, no matter what the thread is about, somebody's going to post something negative.
Right.
And pretty often, it sounds like everything is negative, but if you really look at it and you just logically step back to look at it, it might be four people that are talking to each other about negative things or posting on every single thread saying this is bad, this is a scam, this is bad.
Okay. The same four people.
I really think it's the same four people. Versus, you think about it, how many people actually take the time to comment? Like, how often do you guys scroll through your Facebook feeds, you know, while you're laying in bed and you don't comment on anything? You might not even like a post. You just kind of consume the content. So already 90% of people are not commenting. And then the people that are commenting are not the ones that want to put themselves on the line and get scrutinized, because if you are doing well in a business model, maybe you don't want to tell anyone, or you don't want to share, or you don't want people asking you questions. You know, it just, you have no reason to. So they're not going to share. So who are the people who are leaving comments?
Yeah, I definitely feel that too, because, you know, obviously as a content creator myself, one of the first things I had to really get used to is interacting with other people in the community, whether it's like Reddit or comments on blog posts, because even if I like a blog post, it's not really my nature to comment on it or to share it. But it's like something that, you're right, I think it's something that is not second nature to people. But as a content creator, how do you judge how you're performing? Like, how do you know that you're making an impact on people? Obviously, at this point, I think it's fairly obvious you've made an impact. But why don't you take us to the beginning of Johnny FD? Because that's when, you know, the lessons you learned from Muay Thai to really pushing yourself mentally, physically, work, and knowing that you can work towards a goal. How did that manifest into the phase that you are currently in?
So I originally registered johnnyfd.blogspot.com. It wasn't even an actual website yet, because I wanted a place where I could just post about what's happening. And when I was in Chiang Mai and I was transitioning away from Muay Thai and scuba diving, not because I didn't love it anymore, just because I needed something new. I think, I don't know if people really get it or not, but you can still love something but never want to do it as a living again. I'm sure, you know, some artists or musicians are probably thinking of that. They're like, I'd rather just have a different business or different job and then scuba dive for fun on vacation.
Right.
And I was really genuinely excited about online business. I remember when I made $600 selling my ebook on Muay Thai, I was like, wow, this is the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
I really felt like it was so amazing. I wanted to share with everyone. And I think even though I don't make that much money through Kindle, I only make a couple hundred bucks a month, I still get so excited every month when I post my income reports and I do a screenshot saying, look, you know, made an extra $20 this month from Kindle. And the reason why I even share that is because I want other people to be able to scroll through and be like, okay, these are the 10 things that Johnny makes money from, and this one thing resonates with me the most. And it's weird that everyone actually always thinks of me as the dropshipper, even though I can also be known as the Kindle publisher, the Udemy course creator, the podcaster, YouTube guy. I think that's just kind of a hot topic right now, which is why people keep bringing it to it. But I really believe that, like, when you're excited about something, that's when you should share.
Right. And so you mentioned that Johnny FD started out as a personal blog. What does the FD stand for?
Fighter Dive Master.
Okay.
So the reason why I've had that, and you know what? Like, I think I got some pushback from people like, oh, why don't you just call yourself Johnny and Jen? It's my birth name. And I think a lot of it was because, well, first, screen names, most people have screen names. Like, I think, like, you know, most people listen to this, you probably have a screen name or had a screen name in the past when you post it online, whether it's in a forum or on your MySpace, whatever it is. So that's just normal. If anything, I was more transparent using my real name and then a screen name than most people that just call themselves like PlurBunny, Agent 69 or whatever. So there's that. And the second, I think I've never liked my name. You know, I never felt comfortable with the girl's last name. And I know it sounds silly, you know, but I remember as a kid, my school teachers would always say, Jen, is there Jenny here? Last name Johnny. And it used to drive me nuts. like it used to piss me off so much. And especially because then I would think, I'm like, you know what? What kind of last name is Jen? Like, my Chinese name is Jing. Like, it doesn't sound like Jen at all. Like, why did they sign that to my grandfather when he came here? So I had all these kind of negative connotations to it. So I just never wanted it out there. I think now I'm a lot more comfortable. Like, I think it's been on my About Me page for like 2-3 years now. So it's one of those things where you can call me Johnny Jen if you want, I don't care. But Johnny FD to me is almost kind of like it symbolizes everything that I've accomplished.
You know? Right.
I was a dive master, I was a fighter, now I'm a businessman. And actually, my social media handles are all Johnny FDK.
Because, yeah, I noticed that.
And it's only because Johnny FD was taken on everywhere.
Really?
So I had to add another letter. Yeah.
Who is Johnny FD?
I have no idea. But, you know, I couldn't get it on Facebook or Instagram or anything. So I was like, okay, I need another letter. So the K stands for Kindle.
Really?
Because that was the third part of my journey, my life. And I didn't realize that Kindle would turn into dropshipping, which would turn into podcasting or other things.
Okay.
But the K just kind of stood for, like, the business, like online business.
So first thing you did after Muay Thai was Kindle. And I'm assuming, I'm speculating here, this was a very organic extension of how you've already been creating content and now you can be compensated for creating content. Yeah.
So I had read somewhere that if you have a blog that gets a lot of, you know, views or comments, that you can repackage that blog into a Kindle book and you can sell it. And that was my original plan, was just to spend, you know, a month making it into a book. But as I started outlining it, as I started kind of like pacing the chapters, I ended up rewriting like 95% of it anyways, just because it just flowed better. You know, like there's more things I wanted to add and
right.
go in depth with. But that's basically what it is. Like if you had followed all my blogs from the beginning, that is basically 12 Years of Thailand. But I think people like reading it in a story. Just like life changes quick. I think if you've read JohnnyFT.com from the beginning and listened to every podcast, you probably don't need to read Life Changes Quick, but people just like having a book, you know, that they can just sit and go through it every day.
So from Kindle, you got more involved into online business, got involved in dropshipping, and all the other things that people really know you for those things now. So I'm just going to skip over the dropshipping stuff because it's so well documented, I think. What I want to know is, Grace, you have this blog, you've been doing well for yourself, you've been sharing things. When did the idea for the Nomad Summit come to play?
It was, so the first Nomad Summit was in 2015, and we put it on 2 weeks or something. And it was me and this girl named Katrin from Austria, who were at a bar. It was at a digital nomad meetup. It might have been for Nomadlist. And I remember thinking, like, this is awesome. Like, you know, this is the first event we've had at Chiang Mai because nobody would organize anything. You know, there wasn't any, you know, there wasn't really any groups or weekly events or anything.
Not yet?
No.
It seems like Chiang Mai has been the hub, nomad hub for, I guess as long as I can remember is a stupid statement because I've only been into this for the last 2 years.
I think sometimes we forget how new this is. Like, I feel like, you know, it's because we're so immersed in it, we just kind of assume like this has been forever, but really it's only been a few years. In 2013 was the first time I heard the term digital nomad. I know it's, you know, I'm sure it's been around before, but it didn't really get popularized until around then. Wow. And back then, you know, we would call each other like location independent entrepreneurs or just online business. Mm-hmm. We would call it marketing or, you know, whatever. And there was the only event that was in town was the monthly DC Junto. And the DC, the Dynamite Circle, it's a paid online forum.
Oh.
That it was great in its time. I'm not involved in it now, so I don't know what it's like. But at the time, it was pretty much the only way to meet other digital nomads who had some kind of online business and do meetups. Uh-huh. So they would have a meetup every month. And then there was this other meetup. And I thought, like, this is awesome. Like, why isn't this, first off, like, more often? But second, it'd be nice if you could do this somewhere that's not a bar. Because at a bar, it's loud. Everyone's drunk. You know, it's, you can meet each other, which is great. But then you can't really learn from each other. You can't really have a conversation. So I remember specifically walking around with a beer in my hand and just saying, hey, what if we did this again? You know, but with, like, you know, in somewhere quiet, you know, where we can, and, you know, have people actually share. And I remember the first four people were like, no, it's, you know, it's stupid. And I wanted to do it so bad that I just kept asking people until someone was like, yeah, it's a good idea. And I took that as validation to say, okay, let me do this. And I met Katrin at the co-working space. And I was like, hey, I'm thinking about putting this event together, but, like, I don't know if anyone's going to come. And I think at the time I had just started making money online and I wasn't making a lot yet. So I was like, I can't really afford to front the cost of a seminar room if nobody's going to come. And she said, oh, you know what? Like, I know some people at Buffer. Maybe, you know, they like to meet, host meetups. You know, maybe they'll donate some money. And she got them on board. She was my co-organizer for 2015. And it was the first year we had about 120 people show up. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. This is the first gathering, at least in Chiang Mai, for digital nomads to come meet each other, but also learn from each other. And that's been the goal for it ever since.
Right. And through the years, how would you say, not just for Nomad Summit, how would you say the digital nomad community has grown over the last few years? And what are kind of the trends that you're noticing? Because I think it's hard for someone like myself, because I think I'm catching it when it's you know, pretty much at its peak and still continuing to grow. But what was it like being in the early stages of developing this community and on all the things that, you know, I've seen in my last month in Chiang Mai?
So 3 years ago, it was one co-working space and there was maybe 20 of us. And a lot of people were either programmers or they were remotely. And there wasn't like a big scene or anything. You know, nobody really talked about it that much. Nobody really had, nobody was really blogging about it. But people were very like nice to each other. And I don't think anyone was ever negative. Like even if they disagreed with something, they would be very cordial and say, oh, you know what? That's not my, you know, something that I would recommend. I would recommend this instead, which is very helpful.
Very constructive.
And last year in 2015, 2016, I guess, it was more like more people were just kind of like showing up unprepared. But because there's so much information, it made it so easy to come here. I think airline tickets happened to be cheaper that year too, because for whatever reason, I think fuel costs were lower. It just became more popular. There were, you know, I started blogging about it a lot. I had all these guides, like how to move to Chiang Mai, the cost of living, where to find an apartment, all this stuff. The podcast where I had interviewed like 100 people who were already passing through here. And they're like, oh, well, these 100 people can do it. I can do it too. So a lot of people kind of showed up unprepared. And they're like, okay, I'm here. You know, give me a business. So like, I'm ready to be, you know, rich. And I think a lot of people just didn't have the mindset to sit down and actually focus to build a business. A lot of people probably should have done what I did and just, you know, traveled for a year first and either did Muay Thai or scuba diving or volunteering or something that they enjoy doing until they can unwind and just be ready to get into business. Mm-hmm. And I think this year, not only has it not just tripled in size, but you know, it's probably 10x the amount of people came through Chiang Mai. It's packed. I mean, I think it's starting to die down now because it's burning season, but a month ago there was like definitely over 1,000 people. They're all nomads in like one square mile, which is crazy. And I think, and it was really sad for me because this was the first year ever that I've heard so much negativity online or about the nomad community. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe last year we were a little bit naive where, you know, everybody was excited, you know. But this year was the first year. It hasn't been like constructive criticism, as in people don't say, I don't, you know, recommend this. You should do this instead. People have just been like, no, everything's a scam. There's nothing's working. And I think it's a big shame. And I'm really afraid what's going to happen in the future. Like, I'm not for me, because I honestly can just do my own business and I would be just as successful. Especially with all the kind of skills I've learned now and having a head start, I think I would be just fine. Even if I never did online business again, I got into like real estate investing, I think I would actually just do fine. But I'm so afraid for people who are working a job they hate back home. They have no savings. They're just wasting money trying to make themselves happy, either buying clothes or materialistic things that they don't need, going to clubs to try to pick up a boyfriend or girlfriend, or just doing things that aren't fulfilling. I'm afraid for them that they won't have this chance if this community doesn't kind of come together and be more positive again.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a great point, because that's something I've been thinking about for a while as well. Because it's something we alluded to before we started recording. It's the idea that this fixation on digital nomadism, so this lifestyle, you know, whether it's living out of a backpack, being in a different place every few days, I think people are kind of missing the point. Because when I hear your story and I hear it from beginning to finish, I don't think digital nomad. Like, that's just like a small chapter. What I really think about is self-improvement and how do you live your desired lifestyle? Because, you know, you could be perfectly happy working a corporate 9-to-5. And I think it's almost like people are glorifying this lifestyle and corporate shaming people who choose that path. When in reality, it should all be about self-improvement. And one of the things that I've noticed from conversations with over 90% of my guests is that the big takeaway is always that self-awareness must come first before any form of self-employment. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that, because I think this fixation on the buzzed phrase digital nomad is doing everyone a disservice, because that's really not the main thing. The main thing is freedom. And I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
That's hard because, so I think anyone who's living a life that they're not happy with, whether it's in the corporate or location independent, I don't want to say you should shame them, but should, like, I like calling people out, you know, like,
right.
It's one of those weird things where I feel bad, you know, like, I think some of my corporate friends back home are people that had like a normal life. Mm-hmm. They hate me because I rub in their face, and I don't rub in their face how much freedom I have or how much money I make. I rub in their face that they can have it too, because I know they would be happier if they stopped working the job they hated. If they moved out to Thailand or mm-hmm. to wherever they want to be in the world and did what they wanted to do. I think that does annoy people, but in a sense, I think, you know, I know it's not the nicest thing to do. The nicest thing would be just be like, oh, you know, everything's great. Your life's good, and have more empathy. But that's not my personality. I think, and you know, and that's probably why I rub some people the wrong way as well, mm-hmm. is because I'm very blunt. I'm very honest. I'm very, you know, straightforward, and I don't filter very much. So I'm sure there's always going to be something I'm going to regret saying. I guarantee if you listen to this podcast 4 years from now, I'm going to regret saying some of the things I regret saying. You know, I'm going to look like an asshole or a douchebag or whatever it is, right?
Right.
Maybe I'll be a family man by then, and I'll be like working a corporate job, and I'm like, oh God. But, you know, when it comes down to it, it's everyone has their own life to live. And I think a lot comes down to personal responsibility and just being true to yourself and not lying to yourself. Because I think people know. So the reason why some people are mad at blogs like mine is because we have photos of us with coconuts on the beach. You know, and we, you know, and they think that we are depicting an unrealistic lifestyle where you're not, you know, you don't have to work, you just magically get money. And I think if someone just read the headline or just looked at the photo, they might think that. They wouldn't think that. But if someone actually read my blog post or they actually listened to this interview, you know, without being on their phone looking at other Instagram, they actually read one of my books, they would know it takes a lot of hard work. And I've never said it doesn't. And if I did say it, you know, like, by accident, you know, don't pick that one thing out. But I guarantee you 99% of the time, I go into detail about how long something takes or how much work it takes. And the people who just skim past that and just look at the headline or just look at the photo, it's their fault. Like, if they think everything's going to come easily, that's their entitlement mentality, thinking like, you know, oh, okay, all I have to do is buy a ticket to Chiang Mai and then all of a sudden I'll be making $100,000 a year. Like, and they come and then they don't want to work. You know, and then they don't want to pay for somebody's time to train them, or they don't want to. I mean, it's like almost like imagine going to a school and saying like, well, I don't want to pay you, but I want you to teach me a skill, and then I want you to guarantee to give me a job afterwards.
Right.
They'd be like, no, are you stupid?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point about entitlement, because people have been branding like this current generation, my generation, your generation, as the, you know, the entitled generation. I just read something. I just watched an interview with Gary Sinek where he talks about this. And you also mentioned personal responsibility, which I think is very, very important, because, you know, part of self-awareness is understanding that you need to make a change in your life. And I think the different chapters of your life really embody that. But how can people who might have not taken that step yet, how can they make sure to keep themselves in check? Is there anything that you do, like, every so often to make sure that you're on the right track? Do you set goals? Is there something that's specific to you that you use to keep yourself in check?
Yeah, I've always set goals or challenges, or at least, you know, the last couple of years when I've actually been successful. Mm-hmm. My first big goal was called the Gold Watch Challenge, where I wanted to have $30,000 in the bank, because that's a million Thai baht. I think I also called it the Thai Millionaire Challenge. And at the time, I think I had like $2,000 or something. I didn't have that much money. And to me, to be able to go from having a couple thousand dollars and making $600 a month to be able to be, I think at the time when I set that challenge, I was just starting my online journey and I was already making like $2,000 or $3,000 a month, which to me was a lot of money. But if you think about it, if you make $3,000 a month in the US, that means you're probably, you have a very normal job. You make like $39,000 a year or something.
Yeah.
So it's nothing spectacular. And then you'd end up spending all $3,000 on rent and food and gas and insurance. So to save $30,000, it seemed impossible. I know 100% if I stayed in LA, I never would have saved $30,000.
Right.
And I'll guarantee that most of my friends back in California do not have $30,000 in the bank. know, they probably have jobs that pay double, triple that, or maybe more, but most of them do not have $30,000 net worth in the bank. So for me, if I knew if I can get that goal, you know, and I would reward myself by buying a gold watch.
Right.
But more than that, it was about knowing that, and the reason why I picked a gold watch is that's kind of the symbol that you get when you retire. This was like my challenge to myself. And I wrote about it in Life Changes Quick in a lot of detail, but that was probably my first big goal besides the physical goals like doing the Tough Mudder or climbing Mount Kibalu. And from that point on, I've always had other kind of stretch goals. I think, you know, I was going to buy another watch at 100,000 and another watch at quarter million, another watch at half a million, another watch at million. But I decided, I was like, I don't even want more watches because I'm traveling. Yeah. Like, I don't want to have other nicer stuff. You know, it's like a waste. So I don't think I'll buy another watch ever. But I think these goals are very important. And to be honest, right now, I'm in kind of this limbo stage where I go through growth and maintenance mode. Where growth mode, I have a goal. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to create a new business. You know, whether that goal is to add another 5K a month in passive income or create another stream or put together a big event. During those times, I have a goal. Right now, I just want to take a month off. So everything's in maintenance mode. So everything really is passive income. You know, I remember this morning, I went to the co-working space. I was there for I wasn't even there for 2 hours. And I was like, you know what? I think I'm done. I came home, watched Family Guy, took a nap, and now we're doing this.
Sorry to interrupt the nap.
No.
That's great. So, you know, we're hitting the end of the interview, but I wanted to ask you, what are the things that you're really excited about, you know, 2017? Obviously, there's been a lot of negativity this year already, but, you know, as digital nomads, we're kind of removed from that. Yeah. So personally and professionally, what are you really looking forward to this year?
So what's actually ironic is my mom, you know, who, she doesn't care about any of the business stuff. She actually still asks me every time I talk to her. She's like, are you sure you have enough money for food? And I'm like, Mom, I'm doing fine. Just, you know? And every month when I send her money, she's like, you know, like, oh, you know, if I don't want you sending all of it, make sure you keep some for yourself. I'm like, Mom, like trust me, I'm fine. So she doesn't understand any of this, but she did tell me that this year is the year of the chicken. And I think it's the metal chicken. Chinese New Year is
metal chicken
in Zodiac.
Yeah.
Maybe not the metal chicken, though. It's a different chicken. Fire chicken?
I don't know. I'm year of the roosters.
Rooster too? Okay.
I didn't know there was cool variants of the
chicken. Yeah,
chickens.
Yeah. So how old are you?
I'm 23.
Okay. So you're actually one whole chicken cycle away from me. Because I'm 35. And it takes every 12 years there's another chicken born. So, or rooster born. So anyways, it's the year of the rooster again. And she said, okay, well, this year, there's going to be a lot of great things happening, but there's going to be a lot of people gossiping about you. And it was, and I can't believe how accurate that was. And the first thing I wrote, my first blog post, if you look at johnnyfd.com, and look on January 1st or 2nd or something, I wrote a post called the Negativity Free Challenge. Because that, I knew that that was what would help not only me the most if I was positive and I thought with a kind of a very abundant mentality.
Right.
But also that's what would help the digital nomad community, but probably also the world. And when I say negative is free, I don't mean people can't have constructive criticism or offer, you know, call people out if they're stupid or just do something, you know, dumb. Mm-hmm. I mean, give people a solution. So for example, if somebody doesn't like dropshipping as a business model, offer a solution. Say, you know what? I don't think dropshipping is the best, you know, business model for you. I would suggest you do XYZ instead.
Right.
And then everybody in the world would be better off because people would have another solution that they can do that instead. Or there's no kind of help to nitpick and find things. And one crazy thing is, one thing that I have been wanting to do and been trying to do in 2017 is I just don't reply to the Reddit threads or the Facebook group threads anymore. And kind of hoping you know what, maybe the people will go away. If you stop feeding the trolls, they'll just go away. And sometimes I'll just happen to see it. I think I've unfollowed most of the groups now, but I'll see things like people say Johnny was never broke. This was an elaborate scheme where he went into poverty for 4 years, then wrote a book about how to live cheaply, so then he can come back 4 years later and then he can promote dropshipping. And I read that and I was like, are you guys stupid? If I was that smart, to plan 4 years advance, take a bunch of photos of me, you know, videos of me living in these crappy conditions, and then write a whole book just to be able to get to this point. Like, I could have built the next Uber.
It sounds like a lot of work to even plan all of that out. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. And even the backlash about dropshipping, I don't think people realize that if I didn't genuinely think dropshipping was the best thing for most people to start with, or if it wasn't what worked for me, I can easily just promote something else. They make courses for everything. You know, I could promote an Amazon FBA course. I can promote a web development course. I can promote some podcasting course. And I can make the exact same amount of money, if not more, promoting something else than I did do dropshipping. And it's, I don't think people realize, like, I don't think people are thinking the big picture. You know, I think people just kind of like want to nitpick on small things. And for me in 2017, I think what I'm really trying to focus on is realizing I cannot change individual people, and I shouldn't focus my energy on changing individual people. Because if I do, I'll be wasting my whole day, all my energy focused on the people that don't matter, the people that probably wouldn't be successful anyways, even if they, you know, even if I held their hand through something. And instead, I need to use that energy for the bigger picture, to help the people that actually want to be helped, and to, you know, and maybe even think even bigger than that and say, like, what is something that I can do with my reach now, with my network, and make an even bigger change?
Yeah, and I think that's great. So final question, just to catch a tail end of that. What do you recommend for, you know, up-and-coming content creators in the digital nomad space, like myself, to deal with, you know, backlash like this? Because obviously you're a lot more well-versed in dealing with these negative situations that could really deter people from even wanting to share their expertise or to document what they're doing. But what would you say to people who are thinking about, you know, trying to create value for others?
So there's only two ways to never get the backlash. One is to be perfect and have lived your whole life perfectly.
Yeah.
And also do something that is so vanilla that nobody can, or so boring, you know, that nobody can say anything bad about. Or you can just not post anything ever. And those are the only two ways to never get any hate or negativity. I think even then you probably would, someone would still find a way to hate you. So instead, what I recommend is realize before you get to that point that it will happen. And realize that once it does happen, you have two choices. One is you can back down and you can let the trolls win. And by winning, that, you know, that can mean you stop posting or you change your content where, you know, you start pandering to them instead or trying to, you know, please them instead.
Right.
Or you can just take it as a sign that every single successful, you know, really anything, especially with the content creator online, you know, even if you just go to any YouTube channel, look for your favorite YouTube celebrity, even someone who like has never said a bad thing in their life, read the comments. I bet you there's going to be some like really bad trolly hate comments there. And realize that is a mark of success. Once people start hating on you, that means that people are noticing you. And it's unfortunate because I don't want it to be this way, but all publicity really is good publicity. For me personally, instead of me trying to fight back and answer these people's questions and their comments, because that's what I used to do. I wasted a lot of time last year. Every time they would doubt something, I would write a whole blog post explaining it, showing, you know, screenshots and evidence, creating a video around it. And what would they do? Instead of being satisfied, they're like, oh, okay, you know, Johnny's a good guy. He wants to share this. He wants, you know, like he really wants to help. They would just find something else. And they would find something else. So instead of doing that, I recommend to people just to keep creating good stuff and have all the good content out there. So the people that want to find you and want to really genuinely learn, they will find you.
Great. And I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast. So I want to thank you again for being so generous with your time and really appreciate everything you've done for the community. And yeah, I wish you have a great month ahead in maintenance mode.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And to everyone listening at home, if you guys want to live this life, it is definitely possible. You have to put in the hard work, but it is possible. Don't let anyone tell you it's not.
Perfect. And we'll include links to everything, all the articles and books we discussed in the show notes below. And we'll also include information on how you can follow Johnny and what he's up to next.
All right, see you guys.
And that's a wrap for my interview with Johnny. If you want to find out more about Johnny and his adventures, along with more information about everything we talked about, visit theremotelifestyle.com/29. There you'll find the show notes for this week's episode. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Remote Podcast. Be sure to leave a review of the show so that I can continue to improve it. If you liked what you heard, go ahead and hit subscribe so you never miss out on an episode. If you're ready to take the leap and live the remote lifestyle, visit theremotelifestyle.com/remote to sign up for our free email course titled Become a Digital Nomad in 7 Steps, even if you have no idea where to start. The course will take you from sitting in your office wondering what to do with your life to having a plan of action to live and work remotely. So make sure you don't miss out by visiting theremotelifestyle.com/remote. That's all for now, and I'll see you in the next episode.